From Romeo, Michigan, I'm Craig Cole.
From Knoxville, Tennessee, I'm Zach Bowman.
From Little Baghdad, Michigan, I'm Eric Tritko.
And I'm producer Ben Sanders in Plymouth, Michigan.
This is Roundabout.
Hello and welcome to Roundabout, episode number 5, our weekly chat covering car culture, vehicle reviews, and some of the auto news you may have missed.
Every week we peruse the all-you-can-eat buffet of the internet in search of a cohesive, zen-like theme. We find all kinds of different topics and news bites to fit that theme, however dried out or sneezed on they may be. And whatever's left over, well, we talk about it anyway, because we'll eat anything, even if it's been sitting out all day. Welcome, everyone, to what I can assure you will be another Knock Your Socks Off edition of Roundabout. The only problem is this week we're running on a skeleton crew. You see, Jeffrey Ross, he's still unable to join us. I think he's serving like 5 to 10 for racketeering or something. Michael Banovsky is busy celebrating Canadian Thanksgiving, whatever that is. And Michelle Naranjo, she had to bow out for personal reasons, I guess. So that just leaves 4 of us. Mr. Sanders, myself, Zach Bowman, and our fill-in, Mr. Eric Tritko, a.k.a. Rumble Strip. So how is everybody doing? Eric, how are you?
Doing good.
Great, great. So you had an interesting story that you found to start things off, which kind of ties in with our theme. It's about NASCAR and cocaine.
Yeah,
kind of an odd combination. Tell us a little about that.
Well,
not if you know it, NASCAR, actually. Not that.
Yeah, the NASCAR, the Grand Am series. JC France, who's a member of the what I refer to as the Beachfront Mafia, also known as the France family, who run NASCAR and Daytona and all that, was arrested the other night with his quote-unquote roommate while street racing through the streets of Daytona. He, France, in his Lamborghini, his roommate in a Cayenne with and his roommate had a hooker with him. France had cocaine with him. There was a high speed car chase through the streets of Daytona, and it was seen right out of Miami Vice.
Really?
That's what the story says. Oh, and the best part of it is when they finally did pull him over, he pulled out the greatest card you can when you think you're famous and you get arrested, the "Do you know who I am?" card.
And of course, nobody knows who you are.
Well, no, and it's funny. A friend of mine from England, I sent that story to. He's like, "So did the police ask to call in and say, hey, we have a guy who doesn't know who he is?" And it's not the first time a member of the France family has been arrested and pulled that card out, because I think it was a year or two ago. It might have been Brian France crashed his Lexus into a light pole and got nailed for DUI and pretty much pulled the same stunt. You know, do you know who I am?
Good Lord.
We own this town.
But that bit of news is convenient for us this week because our theme is music, Ben.
I potted the audio down and I didn't pot it back up. Hold on.
Come on, Jan Hammer.
Oh yeah. That's right. This week's theme is Miami Vice. Good stuff.
Get your wayfarers, boys.
Make sure you're not wearing socks with those shoes.
Blazers and tees time.
Eric, you had concocted this as the theme for this week.
Well, you know, it was the whole thing when I read the France story about, you know, high-speed chases in exotic Italian sports cars with hookers and drugs. I mean, that just seemed, you know, very 1986 to me.
Indeed it does. The only problem is, myself and Ben included, have never seen Miami Vice. Can you bring us up to speed a little bit on that show?
Oh, it was actually a very revolutionary show in its day when it debuted in the mid 84, 85 when it debuted. Just the way that it was shot, it was shot very cinematically, lots of bright colors. and things like that. And if anyone has never seen it, you can go on to Hulu.com, and they have the whole series on there. It's great. Sonny Crockett, and which was Don Johnson, and Philip Michael Thomas played Rico Tubbs, and I think Don Johnson's had his career, and Philip Michael Thomas, you can see at 3 a.m. on infomercial selling swampland in Florida.
Sweet. So, Zach, are you familiar with The Vice or no?
I have to admit, I actually own a Miami Vice T-shirt, but I don't wear it with a blazer, and I do wear socks. So there are limits to my fanhood. That's all I got.
Wow.
So, you know, the show was just like, you know, over the top 80s. You know, with the hot chicks with hair the size of your house, and you know, fast cars and fast boats and cool houses and. All this crap that most normal people never get to see. So, So you guys didn't even see like the 2006 movie with like Colin Farrell that was really bad. You didn't see that?
I don't see movies.
Craig, I'm disappointed in you. I gotta be honest.
I know. He's ben not joking. He really does not see movies.
Well, you know, if you get bored and feel like Netflixing something that you don't really have to pay attention to, that's the movie for you. So.
Well, I will let me write that down on my list here.
Or if you really feel like cheap and just a throwaway thing, there's always like, you know, Mini Nova or the Pirate Bay or, you know.
Oh, yes.
So having not seen the show and just watched the intro over and over, does Hyalai play a big part in the show?
not exactly, other than the fact that it's, you know, that was very Miami. It's just a very Miami thing.
Okay. Well, wow. What do we got up first, Craig?
Yeah, our first Miami story, well, not really a story, but it ties in nicely with the Miami Vice theme. It's the Pontiac Stinger concept from, I believe, what, 1989, was it?
I believe you're correct.
And I guess GM was just trying, with this concept car, they were trying to cram as much crap as they physically could onto one concept car.
You know, last week when Bonofsky was talking about this, you know, at first I thought he was joking when he was like, it's got a garden hose and lawn chairs and all this crap. But, like, you watch the video of this thing, and at first the announcer is, like, trying to weave everything into this theme, and eventually he just, like, breaks down and starts listing shit they put into this car. And they're absolutely not joking. I mean, it's got all kinds of pointless. Two vacuum cleaners, you know?
An ice crusher, I think.
you can run the blender off the motor.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
PTO to run the blender. What about one of those VCR tape rewinders? Probably got one of those, too.
Well, you know, it is the perfect color of neon green that fits the 80s, and, you know, it's on the beach. So I think that fits right into our Miami Vice theme. And, oh, yeah, it comes with surfboards built in the doors, I think, or, you know, boogie boards or whatever they were called in the day.
Cool. I mean, it's just bubbling with optimism, you know. America was a land.
Compact disc player.
That's right.
I got to get me one of those.
Wow. Where can I find one?
Yeah, you can just see this car being like loaded onto a container ship by a bunch of Russian mafia, you know, and the Miami Vice boys coming to save the day. Absolutely.
Well, with all that empty plastic, you probably could stuff a lot of white powder in it.
Yeah,
or actually,
right.
What was the other movie where it was the Mexico U.S. with Michael Douglas and Benicio del Toro.
Traffic.
Yeah, Traffic, where, you know, they make dolls out of, you know, the dolls they were shipping up were actually like cocaine. Well, that car could be
100% cocaine.
Exactly.
Drug heads just explode. Yeah, sorry.
No, I was just looking. It's got a flashlight. It's got boogie boards, like you said, like a booster seat, a toolkit. It's got a freaking toolkit, and it matches the paint, too.
What about those seats? The seats that come out of the main car seat so you can, like, sit on the beach with them.
That is brilliant. That just makes me long for the 80s.
Well, you know, like, owners now have a hard enough time, like, holding on to their freaking owner's manual. I figure, like, by month three, all this shit would be lost.
Oh, my God.
Like, there would just be, like, giant portions of the seat missing where they drove off and left their lawn chair.
Exactly.
Something like that.
Look at how much fun they're having driving down the beach. They've got streamers and stuff. Come on.
huge hair, giant sunglasses.
Oh, why didn't GM build this? Come on.
Well, you know, Greenpeace and whatever ecological terrorists there are out there wouldn't like this because you're actually driving on the beach and you're disturbing natural terrain.
Oh, it's endangered wetlands.
Yeah, exactly.
Get off the wetlands! You're killing the sand fleas or whatever they have. I don't know. So yeah, that is definitely something, and it's probably best for everyone that GM didn't build it. Or maybe they did with the Aztec. Who knows?
That's to say, because then Pontiac would have gone out of business. Oh, wait. That happened.
Oh, did it? I haven't heard.
It did, in fact.
Well, that's too bad. They could have, you know, incorporated some of this stuff in the G8, you know. Ben, I mean, wouldn't you love a boogie board that mounts right in the door panel?
I don't care about a boogie board, but a camp stove? Bring it.
Yep. Sitting in traffic, fry yourself up some pancakes. Absolutely.
If you had half of the features on there, Ben, you could be knee deep in bitches. They'd be flocking to you.
All dressed in day glow bikinis.
Exactly.
Day glow one piece. Yeah. Not even a bikini.
Yeah.
It's a onesie.
It is a onesie.
So, yeah,
that's the Pontiac Stinger.
Yeah, and I think that's enough of that bad memory. So moving right along, our next topic is a turbocharged Corvette. And, Zach, you found this story for us.
I thought this one sort of fit into our theme pretty well. I mean, Miami Vice was all about cars. Well, not all about cars, but, I mean.
It was about hookers and blow, too.
Right, and cars. So, you know, the third place captured the bronze, but. You know, Don Johnson drove a bunch of really cool cars in the show and actually wound up with a partnership with Ferrari for a Testarossa eventually. But before that, he drove a Ferrari Daytona that wasn't actually a Daytona. It was a Corvette that had been rebodied to look like a Ferrari.
And it even had an automatic transmission in it, too.
It did.
Sweet.
It did. Super classy. But after they got in trouble for not actually driving a legitimate Ferrari, Ferrari just gave them a couple Testarossas to play with.
Well, why didn't they reskin a Fiero?
Well, you know, I don't know.
Because you couldn't have a convertible Fiero?
You can do anything if you put your mind to it.
And I guess they actually needed to do burnouts occasionally. I think that was part of it.
The Iron Duke 4-cylinder couldn't
quite pull it off.
Yeah.
Not with an extra 3,000 pounds of fiberglass attached. Anyway, so yeah, so there are some guys out of New Jersey, which all great stories start this way. Some guys out of New Jersey are claiming to
have built... The Garden State.
The Garden, yeah, Garden, quote unquote. Anybody who's driven through New Jersey knows it does not smell like a garden. Anyway, the guys have claimed...
What was that movie? It was, it had Sandra
Garden
Bullock
State?
In it. No, it had Sandra Bullock in it and Miss Congeniality, I believe it was. And she called it the Refining and Petrochemical State.
Hold on a second. You don't watch movies.
I know. I jumped in.
Seen Miss Congeniality?
Yes.
Are we gonna have to? Are we gonna have to revoke your man card?
I was just gonna say. Let me get that out of my wallet because it no longer deserves to be mine. Anyway, I'm sorry for interrupting you, Zach. Continue, please.
You should
dragging this conversation down. I'm a boat anchor. I know.
All right, so the guys claim to have built a Corvette, a C6 Corvette, with 775 horsepower, 691 foot-pounds of torque. It's twin turbo. That's all cool. You know, people do that not every day, but it happens fairly frequently.
Indeed.
But their biggest claim is that the car gets 40 miles per gallon in town.
Mm-hmm.
And 32 miles per gallon on the highway.
Yeah.
Now,
bullshit.
32 on the highway isn't that big of a stretch because doesn't
exactly.
The normal Corvette get about 30 on the highway?
Yeah, it's pretty close to that. I think, you know, with my time, even with the automatic that I had and even flogging the crap out of it, I saw 25, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So 32 on the highway, I'll believe that. 32 on the highway and almost 800 horsepower, that's a different story. 40 miles per gallon in town. I can't possibly believe it.
What does a Prius get around town? Like 50, is it? I can't remember off the top of my head. But for a 775 horsepower, 40 miles per gallon? Not going to happen.
Yeah, the guys claim to, you know, have used a bunch of odd technology. And for some reason, they've worked the word hybrid into the name. I don't quite get why that is. There's no batteries, no electric motors, anything like that. Basically, they've mounted two turbos towards the rear of the car. I guess, Eric, you were saying that has more to do with packaging than any actual mechanical benefits.
Yeah, it's you're not, especially in something like a Corvette, which could be tight in there for packaging. It frees up space. It removes two big heat sink or heat generators from in the engine compartment, which mm-hmm. keeps your air, you know, keeps the air from getting heated up as well. So, and if the turbos are small enough, there's no turbo lag. Although I was curious,
it would seem like there would be. They're so far downstream, you know, it seems like they wouldn't spin up as fast being mounted back there, but I'm no engineer, so I don't know.
The one thing that I took issue with in this thing was a patented rear-mounted turbo system, which, again, as I said, it, you know, has been done for 10 years. There's a company called Squire's Turbo Systems, or STS Turbo, and you know, and they were all over the place, you know, talking about their stuff. So I'm not exactly sure what or how their that's patentable or whatever. So. I mean, if you can do it, great. I'm all for, you know, 800 horsepower and high mileage if you can do it. But
yeah,
I'm smelling a little Bravo Sierra on here, you know?
Yeah, exactly. To me, this reeks of those like vortex generators that people are supposed to put in their intake ducts. You know?
There is or was a thing like an X Prize deal for cars for some kind of mileage. You know, 100 miles per gallon deal, and it's not had a lot of publicity. But I remember doing 2 years ago, these guys had from Ohio, were taking a Mustang and claiming they could go like 11 seconds and a quarter and qualify for this 100 miles per gallon running E85. And you know, I was just like, whatever. But they wouldn't open the hood. They wouldn't talk about anything they were doing. So I was like, yeah, call me when you see me. So anything like this,
you gotta take it with a grain of salt.
I'm almost tempted to go up there and check it out just because, you know, if there's any basis in it at all, it's pretty freaking cool. But if not, you know, you're lying essentially. The really funny thing is they use a Silverado to tow this Corvette around that has the same system on it, and it supposedly gets 28 city, 32 highway, or 32 around town. So mm-hmm. 28 highway, 32 around town, and has 500 horsepower.
Now, Zach, they took the standard Corvette, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And they dismounted the turbos on it, so this isn't a Z06 or anything.
No, I don't think so. The standard, you know.
Yeah, by the hood, it looks, and by the engine in there, it looks like it's just a standard Corvette.
Yeah,
it's 40 miles per gallon. Holy crap!
The closest I've seen anything coming close to something like this is a guy who owns a nitrous company. He used to work for a company called 10,000 RPMs, which is also a nitrous company, who put a Duramax diesel into a Mustang. Mm-hmm. And ran like low 10, high 9 second quarters, but did get 30 on the highway, which is almost feasible if you consider it's a diesel in a 3,400-pound car.
Yeah. With,
you know, like 1,000 foot-pounds of torque, so... It needs to turn about 1,000 RPM going down the highway. So, but that's the closest I've seen anything to being like this. So,
yeah. Well, I think we'll just have to wait and see with this. I haven't heard anything about it up until now. So, who knows? Maybe they're onto something. But I would say probably not. I'll be the downer this week.
My favorite part about this is on the Corvette Blogger website, which is where I found this. The only comment is a guy saying that there's no way it can possibly be covered by the factory warranty. Like, he has no problem with the fact that it makes epic horsepower and gets epic miles per gallon. But the fact that it's not covered under the factory warranty, that's what really gets him.
That's the deal breaker.
Yeah, yeah. So continuing our Miami Vice theme, our next story here deals with the Porsche Panamera. Now, you may love the car, you may hate the car, but there are rumors swirling that Porsche may be considering a drop-top version of the car, which is interesting.
Nothing screams Porsche like a four-door convertible.
Well, I think they're going to do a two-door, it says.
Mm.
But I would entertain a four-door convertible. That'd be pretty cool, I think.
Absolutely.
They used to be popular in the 30s, you know?
In '60s, late '60s, Lincoln had their four-door.
That's true. Truck. Absolutely. You know all about Lincoln, Zach.
Thanks for bringing that up. Appreciate that.
You know about Lincolns and rifles. So
I do, actually.
Eric, you're not much of a fan of the Panamera, are you?
No.
No? What don't you like about it? Come on.
Let's see. That would be...
Everything,
yes.
Yeah.
The front end I could almost deal with because it's, you know, some kind of 911 slash Cayenne kind of mashed together. But The rear end is so hideous. I mean, it's like you took an E-Series Jag Coupe. I can't remember. I had my whole diatribe on my blog about it some months back about just how hideous it was. And just the fact that it's a four-door Porsche and, you know, it's not that they didn't kill their brand with a SUV, but now they're going to have some kind of executive saloon. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, now I've actually driven the car, albeit essentially around the block, so it's not like any full test or anything. But I've got to say, it does not look half bad in person. The back end kind of reminds me of like a 39 Ford or something, one of the sedans where it just kind of curves down. That's what it kind of reminds me of. And I happen to like those cars, so it doesn't look that bad to my eye.
I have heard that it's a fantastic driver.
Is that true? I drove it around town, and I did not even get a chance to really get on the throttle because it was all city, you know, we're trying to film stand-ups to put on the web, and it just, I didn't have an opportunity to get on the thing like I should have. But, from what I could tell, the steering was very tight, the thing sounds great, it goes like stink when you get on it. I mean, it's fun to drive in that regard.
I will say, in its defense, the guys from Top Gear in the UK are usually pretty critical about stuff like this, and they liked it. So I got to cut it a minor bit of slack for that.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, it's one of those things if you can't let someone else completely form your opinion for you. So, you know,
exactly.
Like I said, before we started rolling, let's talk in January after it's at the Detroit Auto Show.
Yeah. Now, the interior I liked even better than the outside. It's very, very cockpit-like. You know, it kind of wraps around you. And it looks nice. It's solid. It's well-built. I mean, it's a German car. You expect that. But one downside to it is the buttons. It looks like a damn fighter plane or something. It's like they loaded all these buttons in a shotgun and just sprayed them against the dashboard model they had. You know, they're just buttons everywhere. You need a PhD in mechanical engineering to figure it out, I think.
Is it better or worse than iDrive?
Well, it's at the opposite end of the iDrive spectrum. You know, iDrive condenses everything into that godforsaken knob. And then this has pulled out all the functionality and spread it everywhere. So I don't know. I think I would suspect it's a little bit better because hard buttons, in my opinion, are easier to get to. You know, you'll learn the muscle memory of where everything is. If you want, you know, when you want to adjust it, you'll learn, opposed to iDrive where you have to shuffle through all these menus and whatnot. But lots of buttons on there, more than I would have expected.
And Mud Monster is doing his part to keep you in check in the chat room. And says,
oh, yeah?
This is coming from a guy who's watched Miss Congeniality, so we can't forget that.
That hurts. Ouch. I already revoked my man card, and what more do you want from me, Mud Monster? I'm sorry.
Of course, that's coming from a guy who calls himself Mud Monster. So I'm just saying.
Yeah. Were we to judge? So anyway, I think this is a good point to take a break now and hear a few words from one of our generous sponsors. After that, we'll get into our blind spot story of the week, all about small cars and buyer's remorse. Plus, we'll take a look at my experiences with the new Mark VI VW Golf. We'll be back right after this.
Today's broadcast of Roundabout is brought to you in part by...
Oh, hi, Jimmy Stewart here for Quicksilver Motor Oil. Quicksilver gives your car lively go power. Shucks, I use it every time I go motoring, but you don't have to be in pictures to afford Quicksilver. It's just pennies more than the next lowest cost lubricant. Well, let me tell you, that peace of mind is worth miles and miles on the open road. Quicksilver, you can bet your hard-earned dollar, you won't find finer motor oil.
Yep. Now that's thinking with your dipstick, Jimmy Stewart. Quicksilver Motor Oil offers a host of other benefits, like 70% fewer mercury vapors. That's right, 70%. Now you can feel good about pouring used motor oil down the storm drain in front of your house, thanks to Quicksilver. You know, I use Quicksilver in all the cars and all the vehicles I own. What about you, Zach? Do you use Quicksilver?
I do, in fact, but only in the International Scout.
Okay. Fair enough. At least you use it. What about you, Eric? Quicksilver on your menu?
I haven't as of yet, but since I am in need of an oil change in my Ranger, I might have to look into that.
All right. Well, you know, it's available at most auto parts stores, and tell them Jimmy sent you, and they'll give you a 50-cent off, discount coupon. So it's worth trying. Anyway, enough about that rerun fake ad. Now it's time for our Blind Spot Story of the Week. When news topics go unnoticed, are underreported, or otherwise fall off the radar, they land in our blind spot. Today's story is all about the consequences of downsizing. Now, Eric, you found this story. It's posted here on Autoblog. Tell us a little bit about it. Apparently, small car buyers are not as happy with their purchases as perhaps other vehicle buyers are.
I just found this funny on so many levels when I saw the story about because we've been told by those on high who know better than us that America's wants small cars, and yet and when they did buy them a year or so ago when gas prices were high, now that gas prices have returned to some level of normality for us here in the U.S. a good number of the people who bought small cars wish they had gotten something larger, which was had a little more space, maybe a few more features. So I found the irony of the story quite nice from those who know what we want versus those who are pushing their own agenda or don't have a clue.
Absolutely. Kind of surprising, though. What is it? It looks like the article says the compact car market has dropped 15% year over year. That's a sizable decline.
Well, now I guess one question we have to look into that is overall car sales, fell off a cliff anyway. Yeah. So how does that factor into that?
Exactly.
John's talked a lot about that on Autoline. So, and then what was the other number in here? Truck sales have jumped 23%.
Mm-hmm. I guess we never learn, Americans,
Here were the numbers that I found interesting. The survey showed that 30% of small vehicle buyers would like more power with their next new car truck. There's a shock. 25% wanted more cargo room. 25% wanted more technology. Okay, whatever. And then there was a question about safety and a softer ride. So
a softer ride.
Yeah. Only half the subcompact buyers would opt for a compact vehicle with their next purchase, while 35% want a midsize sedan and 18% wanted a crossover SUV.
Surprise. How quickly do you forget?
I tag this for our internal stuff as the sun also rises in the east.
Yeah.
So, it will be interesting to see how some of these small cars that are being brought out now in the product cycle by all the companies will actually fare.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with small cars. I mean, you're going to talk about the Golf. And if it's fun to drive and has adequate power, great. But if it's just a cheap pile of crap, well, then,
Yeah, there are a few cheap piles of crap on the market, no doubt. But there are also a lot of good small cars, The new Golf I liked a lot. I don't think the Focus is a bad car, as old
the
as it is.
The European one or the American one?
Well, the American one I think is a pretty darn good car, but the European one is obviously awesome, but I haven't driven that one yet. Mazda 3, excellent small car. And, you know, I wonder if some of these buyers, if they opted to get sedan models instead of like a hatchback, I wonder if that plays into some of their dissatisfaction, you know, them wanting cargo space.
That's the one thing on the Focus is the elimination of the three-door hatchback where you can only get a trunk. And how much usable space is there actually in a trunk? And I guess I'm one of those people who've never understood the need for a trunk. I find a hatchback more usable, but...
Yeah, absolutely. You get the height, you know, of the hatchback, and then you also get a much wider opening so you can load boxes or whatever crap you're carrying. You know, it's a lot easier to get in the car.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I'd never actually owned a hatchback until we bought our Forester, and that thing sold me. I mean, I guess it was about 3 weeks ago we were up in Virginia, and we moved an entire dining room table, four chairs, and all of our luggage down from Virginia, and, you know, I was still harassing people on the interstate, you know. That's, I can't understand why anybody would go, if you had the option, why anybody would go for a four-door versus a five.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, but they're so practical.
Then again, I can't see why you would get a some kind of SUV when you could get a station wagon, and it's far more usable, far better mileage, and the only difference is that you sit 6 inches lower. Okay, so what? You also get 5 miles a gallon better mileage, so.
Trust me, if I could have found a legacy wagon with the 2.5 turbo and a 5-speed, I would have had it. But sadly enough, those cars are pretty rare, so there you go.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure I've asked you this already, but you have the turbo motor and the 5-speed Forester.
Pretty difficult to come across. I actually had to drive all the way to Raleigh from here, which is about 6 hours to pick it up.
But, jeez.
It was, it's a great car. It's got 95,000 miles on it, and, you know, everything works, and it's good and clean, and it's a blast to drive. I mean, the Forester is technically on the Impreza platform. It's just, you know, a little taller, and you can fix that with, you know, the Impreza springs, so...
Yeah,
I wish Audi would have made the all road where it wasn't so more crossover like just as a regular A6 kind of Avant. With that motor, that would have been great.
That had the twin turbo, didn't it? The 2.7. Yeah. Yep.
I was really heartbroken to see Honda's Crosstour turn out so huge. I mean, when I first saw the spy shots and it just looked like the Accord wagon, I was stoked. I was pretty excited to see that car come to the States. And by the time they were done with it, it was just a freaking disaster.
Can I ask the question that I guess has been asked but not enough is, what is this fascination with this four-door hatchback coupe thing on a four-wheel drive platform? I don't get it. I don't get the X6 and
it makes no sense.
That.
It makes no effing sense. I mean, what, BMW came out with the X6 a couple years ago?
Yeah.
And I saw that. I got to go on the launch of that vehicle, and I shook my head the entire time. It's practically, for all intents and purposes, it's identical to the X5, except they deflated the back end of it, you know, to give it that coupe-like profile.
I think it makes no sense as long as you're not in menopause. I think there are a lot of buyers out there who think that taller means safer, you know, and they don't want to drive a wagon because wagon equals old, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
but only in the U.S. really. Car.
Yeah, well, that's true. It's very true.
Well, could you get a fake wood-sided wagon in Europe? I'm wondering ever, you know. Maybe that's what turned off so many American buyers.
When was the last fake wood-sided wagon you could buy in the U.S.? The late 80s?
Yeah, probably. Well, I would guess a K car, maybe.
Technically, the PT Cruiser still is available with wood paneling.
Is that like a dealer option, or is that factory installed?
I think that's factory. I think you can order it.
Oh, gosh.
Well, you know, next thing you know, we'll get those fake convertible tops on, you know.
Oh my God! I forgot to tell you guys this. I didn't get a picture of it, but I saw a brand new 2009 Impala with a Landau roof.
you mean a soft top type thing?
Yeah. I was blown away. I was absolutely stunned. My wife couldn't figure out why I was talking in tongues. And
proof that A, some people will never have taste, and B, dealers will do anything to make an extra grand on a car.
That's very true.
Yep.
I wish I had gotten a picture of it. It blew me away.
Did it have the little Landau bars on it, though?
Those the Landau bars? Things,
those little curved, like, metal...
No, sadly it did not, but it did have some very cheap-looking chrome trim around the bottom. And, you know, this was a guy, you know, in his mid-40s or so, very nicely dressed, who I guess thought this just reeked of prestige instead of crap. But, yeah, it blew me away.
So. Yeah, just scanning the chat, MudMonster37, he says he's seen one of those around, I guess, his area, and he said he's going to try to get a picture of it. So... hopefully, yeah, if you get that Mud Monster, email it to us, and we'll use it as a highway hearsay, I guess.
A Landau on a Lexus ES330, that I'd like to see.
There must just be a separate option sheet when you walk into the dealer and you're like 80 and above. Have you seen our selection of Landau?
Oh, I had one of those on my Marmon. Yeah. Yes.
It's a Florida dealer option.
You know, I've seen a soft top on like a Chevy Malibu, I think. Like a 98 or a 99 Malibu. It's just awful.
Well, you see them a lot on Chrysler 300s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Grand Marquis.
Yeah, the Grand Marquis. Yep. Oh, goodness. Well, all right, guys, I think that's a good amount of discussion for our blind spot story this week. So let's move on to what we've had in the garage. All right. As we mentioned earlier, I was in Germany for most of this week. I was on the launch of the new Mark VI Volkswagen Golf, and it's a pretty schnazzy car on the whole. I believe it's based on the same architecture as the current version of the car, but I was talking to the designer, and he said they stretched it and lengthened it a little bit. So apparently it has more interior room. I didn't really notice that it was any roomier or anything, but you know, there you go. It's better looking too, I think.
In reading some things this week on that launch, did you get it? They people seem to like the cloth interior better than the leather interior. Did you come away with that impression?
I believe I did not actually get a car with leather. I was only in cloth.
Was it plaid cloth?
It was. A very mild plaid, I guess you could call it. It was not like on the GTI where you can get that bold Scottish tartan or whatever it is. It was just kind of like a cross pattern, very, very tasteful, I guess.
You know, are you driving the petrol or the diesel?
I drove both. There's the 2.5 liter gas and there's a 2 liter turbo diesel.
Mm-hmm.
Diesel is
the same motor that's in the Jetta, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe so. It's 140 horsepower and I think 263 pound-feet of torque.
Oof, that's pretty good.
Yeah. The thing it, you know, the diesel is superior to the gas in all respects, in my opinion. I have never liked that 2.5 liter five-cylinder engine that VW has had. It doesn't do it for me. It's got that weird sound to it. I don't care for five cylinders.
Is that the same five-cylinder that Volvo uses and is in the...
No, this is a different one.
It's a VW-specific motor?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I believe it's, if I remember correctly, it's like half of the Lamborghini Gallardo and V10, and so they just use like a different like cylinder head. I could be completely wrong.
So shouldn't it have like 250 horsepower?
You'd think.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the chat here, and the Duckies brought this up. He said the Mark VI isn't any different platform-wise from the Mark V. The engines are the same, the chassis, the suspension, even the interior. What's the difference? I mean, I seem to be getting the same impression.
The exterior is different. They restyled it a little bit. Not a whole lot, but they refined it. The interior is new. It's very mildly new. It's an update.
So this is like the Mark 5.5.
Exactly.
Did they do something different with the suspension to make it different?
Not that I could tell. I mean, it rode pretty much the same from my other experiences driving the Mark V. But really, I mean, it's a solid car. It's a nice car. The diesel engine kicks ass. I mean, tons of torque, yet it gets up and moves. It's quiet. It's smooth. I don't have any fuel economy numbers to report. I wasn't fiddling around with that on the Autobahn. But we drove the thing, I'm thinking, close to 300 kilometers. And I don't think we used half a tank of fuel. And
that's on the Autobahn. Top speed on your top speed on the Autobahn?
My top speed on the Autobahn, I hit 123.
That's it?
Well,
Miles an hour or kilometers?
Miles an hour.
Oh, okay.
We had American. Yeah, I should have specified that. I'm sorry.
What? 123
kilometers an hour. How do I do that on the 401? What are you talking about?
Yeah, it was. We had American spec cars. It was weird. They were, the gauges and everything were in miles an hour. So you had to cycle through the electronic readout to get it to display kilometers an hour. It's bizarre because the miles an hour did not have kilometers an hour on it. It's stupid the way they had that set up.
I guess you didn't get a chance to test the GTD, did you?
The diesel?
Yeah. The GTD diesel.
Is that the dual clutch?
No, it's the diesel version of the GTI, basically. So it's a sport.
Oh, no. They didn't have that available for us, unfortunately, because that would have been awesome.
Well, let them fly to Germany. Don't get to drive the GTD.
Did you see the GTI or the R20 there?
We saw lots of Scirocco's. Didn't get to drive one, but that is a hot looking car.
Yeah,
it is.
I would take that over a Golf or a GTI any day. And we did see the GTI, but didn't get to drive it. And ditto, like I said, for the GTD.
Mm-hmm.
Not a whole lot. It was kind of odd. There wasn't a whole lot of news to report, you know. I mean, it is a new model, but it's not that new. And for them to bring us to Germany and for that, it was kind of a letdown. But we did get to see Autostadt, which is kind of like Volkswagen's theme park for cars. It's kind of bizarre. They have these various like pavilions scattered randomly everywhere. And one's for Lamborghini, one's for Audi, Skoda, whatever, every brand in the VW group. And they'll have cars in there and then people that can answer your questions about those cars. And it's weird. Very weird.
But the chat room's asking the questions that I know we are all wondering.
Yes.
Does the GTI come with the Landau roof or wood grain side option?
I believe those would be dealer installed options.
Bunny's running down the side. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very 1979.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, do we get the what was it called now? The pickup truck version, there's a name for it.
Oh,
the Cameo, but that's not it.
I keep thinking Plymouth Scamp, but that's obviously not
similar thing, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, nothing like a K car with a pickup truck.
A bed on it. Yeah, that's a tough working truck right there, I'll tell you what.
Dodge 024. I mean, of all the great car names you could ever come up with, the Dodge 024.
Shake my head. So, anyway, back to the Autostadt. The hotel they put us in was literally plunked right in the middle of this theme park, which was kind of cool because you could then walk around and see all kinds of stuff. And they had their VW museum there, which was really sweet. They had hundreds of cars there. They had a V16 Cadillac, kind of random to have in the VW museum. They had a 1937 Lincoln Zephyr sedan, which is a cool car, but again, not something you'd expect to see in the middle of Germany.
Well, did they have some sort of like corporate tie-in? Transmission or something? I don't know.
I have no idea. we only saw them briefly before dinner because they kind of walked us through.
That's what the plaques are for, Craig. You got to stop and read the plaques. Come on.
Ich spreche kein Deutsch, okay?
Any Zeppelins or, you know, there actually was a Zeppelin car or original Maybach floating around?
Not that I saw, no. Nothing like that, unfortunately. Because that would have been totally awesome, though. See the Maybach. But
so I'm looking at this garage.
I don't know.
This, like, tower of...
Oh, yeah, 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 the tower.
That is amazing.
Yes, they have these two towers. They're glass towers. And I think, I don't know, they're 20 stories high. And each story, there's a circular ring of cars. And you can take delivery of your new VW at Autostadt. And what they'll do is they can, if they build your car there, it goes into the tower and they give you a call and you come to the place. And this mechanical arm, like, goes up, grabs your car, brings it down to you. It's so cool to see it in action, the way it works. And they said they deliver some...
Hmm? It's like one of those Coke machines at the mall. On a grand scale. That's pretty awesome.
Yes. Yeah. And they have two of those towers, and they said they deliver something like 600 cars a day
there.
Yeah. That's what I said, because that's a lot of cars. I didn't know that many people in Germany bought cars every day, alone VW. But yeah. So that was my. The gist of my experience in Germany. Pretty nice car, the Mark 6 VWs. Check them out. The diesel is awesome. Try to get that one if you're looking for a fun hatchback.
Did they say anything about production numbers? You know, how many diesels we can expect to see in the States?
They did not really. They never. The odd thing about this event, they never really gave us a press conference about the cars. It was bizarre. They're like, here you go, go drive them. Here's Autostadt. We'll show you that, and then we'll have dinner. And it's like, well, there was no like formal sit down presentation about the vehicles. It's totally weird.
One of the
weird
things that always blows me away about the diesel cars, you know, the manufacturers really pushing, at least the German manufacturers, really pushing diesel as, you know, the solution to all your woes. And then you go into the dealer and you're like, well, I'd like to see a diesel. Well, we don't have any. Okay, well, where's your closest one? Three states over. You know, that kind of bullshit. It's frustrating. I've had three friends recently who've been looking for a small, you know, vehicle. And I was like, well, you know, you can check out these diesels, and all of them, you know, no such luck.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. It's my rant on diesels.
Okay. Cool.
Did you, last question on that. Did you drive the manual or the DSG?
I drove the manual both times, both vehicles, which is pretty slick. Nice gearbox. And I got to tell you, before we wrap this segment up, the Autobahn is freaking amazing. Everybody follows the rules. They stay in the right lane.
They follow the rules?
Exactly.
Not follow the rules? Cooler. 30 days.
Yeah. They stay right. They let you pass. You can go as fast as you want. I mean, you see that it's a white, it's a circular sign. It's white and it has four diagonal lines running through it. And you see that? That means there's ohne Geschwindigkeitslimit. And there's no speed limit. And you can just, you get in the left lane and you go. And then you pass people, you get in the right lane, and a 7 Series will blow past you doing like 50 miles an hour more than you. It's something.
Nice.
So if you ever get a chance, go to Germany, rent a car, and try that out. So anyway, moving right along, I think it's time for us to get into our next segment, Ben.
Hearsay, Tales from the Open Road.
Highway Hearsay is all about what we've seen out on the road, from weird sightings to the stupid things people do. Zach, you found this week's installment, and it comes courtesy of the Information Superhighway. Tell us a little bit about this story, Zach.
All right. Well, I tend to spend a lot of time on Craigslist. I've got two piece of shit vehicles. I've got a 78 International Scout and a 68 Triumph Spitfire, and both of which require constant transfusions of parts. So I spend quite a bit of time looking for, you know, someone trying to get rid of either Triumph or International parts. I came across a barter posting. It says trade 95 Cavalier for AMC Eagle. So this guy has a 1995 Cavalier automatic, 156,000 miles, And for some unknown reason, he wants to trade for an AMC Eagle. That's all he says. That's it. So
He also says it has fairly new tires.
And his daughter drives it every day. So he has one undesirable vehicle, and he wants to trade for a vehicle that was undesirable 20 years ago and is still undesirable today. I don't know. Blows me away.
Well, I've got to ask you, Zach. Were you searching for 95 Chevy Cavalier or AMC Eagle?
No,
and if so, why?
Exactly. I was perusing the newest posts, which is what I was doing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
This actually turned up a motor for the International Scout. So see,
win-win, which is a whole nother story.
Yeah, that was a tale of woe as it turned out. But that's okay. So yeah,
you survived. You survived. That's fine.
So TRXOX says, "Oh heresy! AMC Eagles are awesome." And I don't know if he's ever driven an AMC Eagle, but I'm kidding. I guess those were the ones that were all-wheel drive, right? All-wheel drive
wagon.
Wasn't
that one of the first like all-wheel drive U.S. cars?
Yeah,
Eric, maybe you know better. You're a little bit older than me.
I remember that those coming out in the early 80s, 82, 83. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, I think so. And I think there's a post on either Autoblog or Jalopnik today or yesterday about, was that a car ahead of its time? So here it is, 1983. It's on Jalopnik, 1983 AMC Eagle, too far ahead of its time. Classic ad watch. So that was on Jalopnik today if you're going to go look at it, but it was now granted the interior quality of a 95 Cavalier and say an early 80s AMC Eagle or whatever, that might be very similar in quality.
Maybe this guy just has super low standards. I don't know, but I mean you still see these things trucking around occasionally, which blows me away. I mean, somebody has decided to put their blood into this car to make it keep surviving, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well, let's wish this guy the best of luck in his endeavor to get a new AMC Eagle for himself.
Was it too old to qualify for Cash for Clunkers?
It's too sweet to qualify. That's the problem.
It's too sweet. It is too old, actually. It's way, way too old. So,
well,
there you go.
You've made us all sad now.
I had to pass that one along.
That little gem has to be shared.
True story.
Yeah. So, all right, guys, let's move on to our stupid car trick of the week.
Go on, boy. Go get it. Come on now.
All right. This week's stupid car trick is not so much a stupid car trick as it is a funny commercial for the new VW Polo. Polo, make that
polo.
Yes, not the disease that crippled FDR. No, the Volkswagen Polo, P-O-L-O. So what we've got here is a commercial, and let's watch. There's I think it's an older Packard. It's got flames on the side. It's pulling up next to or in front of the Polo. The greasers in the car talking. They jump out and then enter the cafe from Back to the Future. Apparently they shot this on the Universal Studios backlot, and now they're talking.
So what's that red thing outside, huh?
It's the new Polo.
Polo?
It's cool, isn't it?
Oh. Cool? We'll just have to see about that.
So now they're out somewhere. Going to have a race, it looks like. The Polo pulls up, the old, like I said, Packard pulls up. The girl drops her arms, and they're off like a prom dress. Or at least the Packard is. The Polo is still at the starting line, creeping up towards the guy's girlfriend who started the race. He stops. They look at each other. She gets in the car, sits down. He smiles, reaches over, buckles her into the seat safely, and drives off with his prize.
Revenge of the Nerds.
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you what, I like this commercial because of the Back to the Future undertones. What can I say?
I was going to say the first part of that was directly right out of, like, play-by-play out of Back to the Future, wasn't it?
Literally, yeah. You expect to see George McFly sitting there eating his cereal at the counter, but it's not. It's some, I guess, European guy.
Yeah, I do love the mix of, English and American voices in there.
Hello? Hello? Anybody home? Hey, think, McFly, think.
Thank you for that, Ben. So really, I think this is a pretty clever piece of advertising. You know, I wish they'd put some more effort into commercials here in the U.S.
Now, do you like that better than the Polo ad where the terrorist rolls up, tries to blow up a bomb, and it doesn't explode the car?
Oh, the microbus ad, you mean?
Is it microbus? I thought that was for the Polo.
No, I don't know. Is okay. There one? I haven't heard. I was referring to the other Back to the Future. Oh, okay. They've got the VW bus.
Let Michael Banofsky pull that one up for us for next week.
That's definitely a question for Michael.
Mud Monster says it was the Polo, so.
Was it? Okay. Well, I trust him. He knows his stuff. So, yeah, that's a pretty good commercial. I wonder if, did they make it in England? Because I couldn't pick out the guy's accent exactly. Did either of you guys, were you able to identify it or no?
My ears are actually still bleeding from I have no idea.
I watched that yesterday when our notes came out, and I actually found it was, if you read through the comments, it was kind of interesting that it probably is an English ad, but they said something, but someone noted it was a left-hand drive car. But someone said something about a lot of Scandinavian countries use English ads. So, I mean, who knows? It was definitely for a European market, though.
Yeah.
And it's not like there aren't American actors in the EU working. So.
Or, yeah, exactly. Or
let's use the word actors in air quotes. Yeah.
So, Craig, how does it rate against the likes of, like, say, Miss Congeniality?
Back to the Future?
the commercial is what I was going for.
Oh, well, clearly this commercial is better. It involves cars and Back to the Future. So how can you not like it?
Just had to ask.
Good stuff. So I think that'll just about wrap things up for this week, guys. I'd like to thank everyone out there who is listening to this live. You know, thank you, our fan base. The keyword there is fan. Singular. But, you know, thanks for tuning in, everyone. We'll be back again next week. And Zach Bowman, always a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Glad to be along.
Yeah. You're our resident freelancer, as I've said on several occasions before. And your work is all over the internet. The people can find your stuff at autofiends.com as well as blogs.webridestv.com. Damn it, I did that wrong, didn't I?
You sure did.
Let me correct that. That's blog.webridestv.com, correct?
Yeah, that is correct. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to plug this week?
I don't know. It depends on how adventurous I feel. If you check out Auto Fiends this week, you may see a complete how-to teardown of a Dana 44 axle.
Hey.
So stay posted. We will see.
Cool. How about a rebuild of the International 3-something or other engine?
The 345. I think I'm just going to put the 345 in there as is and hope for the best.
Oh, well, good luck with that.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Since it already tried to kill you, but...
Which can.
Yeah. And Mr. Eric Tritko, thank you for filling in again.
My pleasure.
Now, we're a little light on crew members this week, but you held down the fort, and I thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yes. You're very active on Twitter. Your screen name is Rumblestrip. Besides Twitter, where else can people track you down?
My blog, which is rumblestrip.net, and later this week I hope to have my review of the 2010 Ford Taurus posted.
Cool. We talked about that car last week, so I look forward to reading your review of that and see what you think, you know, formally written down.
This one will actually be a video one, so it's video and pictures with voiced over. So.
Cool. And of course, lastly, but not leastly, I would like to thank our producer, Mr. Benjamin Sanders, for making this live broadcast and, of course, the edited podcast possible. Ben, thanks to you as always.
You're welcome.
Wow. You have no enthusiasm.
Just trying to keep it short and sweet. In, well, out, we're done.
Okay, well, let me wrap things up then.
But enough about your personal life.
Yes. That's what she said. Tried not to. I really tried not to.
Wait, what? Anyway, remember, visit our website, roundaboutshow.com, for more great content throughout the week, including links and show notes. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or criticisms, shoot us an email. Just swing by the site and click on the email button in the sidebar. If you're feeling really ambitious, you can even suggest story ideas for upcoming shows. You can also follow us on Twitter. Just go to twitter.com/roundaboutshow. And to make sure you never miss an action-packed episode, subscribe. Just search for Roundabout in the iTunes Music Store or on the Zune Marketplace. Anyway, thanks to all of you out there listening. Join us again next week as we circle the roundabout. We'll talk to you then.
It's Jimmy Stewart here to tell you about the Sky Mall catalog. Well, I know you got your old pup running around there, and he could use a little playtime in the pool with you. So why don't you just order up one of them little doggy inflatable boats and put your pal Charlie in there with you. Have yourself a little barbecue, cook up some wieners and some burgers, invite the neighbors over, have their kids running around, but not those Chinese next door.